job.
Do you believe his name is Fred Tall?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Fred Tall. Okay, so we'll have Sherry here.
Well, I'm Saturday.
What's that?
I'm going to go rest Saturday.
Might be. There's so much there, you're not for sure. Okay, that's fun. So we'll try to finish up today, hopefully, discussing a little bit the sugya of Kavod HaBriyos. And just to quickly recap what we started to say yesterday, is that the way it comes across in our Gemara and Sefer Shabbos and the Tzadi Dalit is very, very sparse and almost a little bit misleading, because the Gemara just has the line that Kavod HaBriyos is docha losa seisha b'Torah, apparently telling us that it overrides a din of the Torah itself, even though the case in our Gemara and Shabbos wouldn't need to go that far. In our Gemara and Shabbos, we're dealing with an Isser d'Rabbanan. So that difference is significant because it's not clear that the statement that Kavod HaBriyos outweighs a din min HaTorah is 100% literal. And in order to get a full picture, we have to go at least to the Gemara and Maseches Brachos and Daf Yud Kes, which we started to discuss a little bit yesterday, that goes into much more detail. And essentially what we started to see is that Kavod HaBriyos is a sugya which is really all about conflict, but it's all about if there is a tension between a din in the Torah or a din from Chazal and human dignity, and how that tension is reconciled. So it's very significant where it prevails and where it doesn't prevail. That's not just the detail of the sugya, that's really probably the essence of the sugya, where it is that Kavod HaBriyos is going to take priority and where it isn't. So that Gemara in Brachos goes into some of the details, starting off with a premise that we would have thought before we ever heard of this sugya. We would have thought that Kavod HaBriyos is really not something that we can take into account if the halacha tells us otherwise. We know the halacha very often requires sometimes extreme sacrifice. So therefore we would have thought that even if we're embarrassed, we're not in keeping with our dignity, whatever it is, I would have thought that Kavod HaBriyos would not have necessarily been able to regulate. And yet, and that's indeed the way the Gemara starts off the discussion, because the Gemara quotes the pasuk, "Ein Eitzah v'Ein Chachma v'Ein Tvuna l'Negev Hashem." And as we discussed a little bit yesterday, that pasuk could probably be interpreted in two ways, which is also a significant question. Is the pasuk trying to tell us that the very concept of Chachma, Neitzah, and Tzvuna is defined based on what the Torah says, so therefore if it's in contradiction to the Torah, by its very nature, it's not Eitzah, Chachma, and Tzvuna? Or, we could say differently, we could say maybe there is an abstract concept of wisdom and counsel and understanding, even if it's not consistent with the Torah. But our allegiance to the Torah takes priority. So therefore, we don't acknowledge the Eitzah Chachma Tzvuna when it's the Neged Hashem. Not to say that it doesn't exist, but then we have to give priority to the Torah. So that's the opening premise that we would have had, and that's what the Gemara indeed sets up as the opening premise, and tells us a principle, B'makum Chil Hashem, Ein Cholkin Kavod L'Rav, that if it's a situation where we have to engage in a Chil Hashem, so then we're not going to show Kavod to the Rebbe, meaning Kavod to anybody that represents a high level of Kavod. I think it was David first and Sammy. So you could say that Ein Chachma, that there is no such concept, it's defined by the Torah, so if it's against the Torah, the concept doesn't mean this, that is the first reading. Or the second reading would mean not that the concept is defined by the Torah, there is such a concept as Chachma Tumeitza objectively. But if it's Kineged Hashem, so then we don't acknowledge it, we don't let you take it into account, we still prioritize the Torah. So it's a big difference, because, and that's going to be very much relevant to trying to understand this whole sugya, the question of, is kavod defined by the halacha, or is it that the halacha and the kavod HaBriyos as a general principle are somewhat in tension with each other? And we have to try to figure out how we're going to prioritize the tension. Sammy?
I just wanted to say that I think Rashi holds the second
one. Okay.
Because he says, Rashi, very short, he just says, in Chachma Kule, Kashu Neged Hashem. He says says that in both brachos and in Shabbos, I think.
Except that you could, actually, as we saw from Lechus Machshavas, we could also see that you could translate the word chashim in a couple different ways. So you might be right, but you could, I could also theoretically force whichever reading I want to into that word. You know, either that means that it's not significant, or it's not acknowledged, or it's not considered to be that.
Right.
So theoretically, it opens itself up to enough possibilities that it probably could go in both directions. But point is well taken. So what emerges from that Gemara is that after that opening premise, that Kavod Abrios is not going to win because Ein Eitza Ve'Ein Chachma, then the Gemara goes on to tell us some situations where apparently Kavod Abrios does win. And you have to glean it from the discussions there, but emerge a few categories. One category is Dinim Derabbanan, because the Gemara explains that statement of Lav Shivatorah, Lo Sasei Shivatorah, doesn't really mean all the Lo Sasei in the Torah. It means one specific one, Lo Sasei. And we alluded to yesterday a little bit, this certainly seems to draw in the whole machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban as to what the source is for the authority of Dinim Derabbanan, the Rambam maintaining that it is Lo Sasei, and the Ramban arguing. So this Gemara could be a proof for either, depending on how you read it. You could read this Gemara as saying that Lo Sasei really applies to Dinim Derabbanan, and that's really suspended in this case, and it sounds like the Rambam. Or you could say, like the Ramban himself says this Gemara, that the Gemara uses the word Asmachuhu Akra de Lo Sasei, maybe it's an Asmachta, and maybe especially the whole thrust of the sugya is that if it was a real Din Doraisa, then Kavod Abrios should not win. So we won't get too involved in how much that Gemara relates to that discussion. But on some level, the Gemara tells us Lo Sasei either is a source for, or a clue to, or a shorthand for referring to Dinim Derabbanan, and that's one din here. That Kavod Abrios can outweigh a Din Derabbanan. The Gemara invokes a few other examples. In addition to a Din Derabbanan, it seems like something that is Mahat Torah could also theoretically have Kavod Abrios win over it if it's Sheval Tasa, which we'll treat right now as a omission, as failing to do a mitzvah, rather than doing an Avera. So you can't commit an active Avera against the Torah for Kavod Abrios, but maybe you can skip out on a mitzvah. We'll have to get into a little more detail about that. So Drabbanan's Sheva Al Tasa. Gemara also invokes the category of Davar Sheva Mamon, which could overlap with other categories, but Gemara talks about Hashanah Sareida, that there is this whole category of Zakim Veinu Likvogo, that if a person has an obligation to return a lost object, but in doing so, he's going to have to be revised himself, he's going to have to compromise his Kavod Abrios, so apparently that's not required as well. It's the category of Momo, therefore it has its own ruling as far as that's concerned. And then we saw that the Gemara also talks about Tumas Kohanim. And Tumas Kohanim is a very difficult example, because Tumas Kohanim, in the case of a, let's say, a Kohen being Metame for his relatives, or a Kohen Gadol, who is not metame for relatives, but is metame for a meis mitzvah. So there you have also an example of Kavod Abrios prevailing, and it's a harder example to figure out. The Or Sameach has a discussion about this, that you may have thought that maybe this is not about Kavod Abrios, maybe this is about the mitzvah of Kvura. And if the mitzvah of Kvura is what's done for the Lo Sasei, and he explains why he doesn't think that's true, why this is a manifestation of Kavod Abrios. So we have to figure out, how does that work if this doesn't follow any of the existing rules? This is an active violation of Torah law. It's not Sheva Al Tasa, it's not Derabbanan, it's not a Davar Sheva Mamon. It doesn't fit any of these rules. How could it be that Kavod Abrios is going to win in this case? I'll tell you a quick story, giving out some of the details. Yeah, the Rav had a drasha. I think Rav Shechter maybe wrote this up somewhere. One of the Talmidim of the Rav wrote this up somewhere. That the can see how much emphasis the Torah puts on the covet of humanity, because the holiest person in the Jewish people is the Kohen Gadol, and the holiest time is Yom Kippur, and the Kohen Gadol goes with the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And despite all of that holiness, if the Kohen Gadol in that situation should be Pogeya B'meis Mitzvah, the Meis Mitzvah, whoever it is, could be anybody, the Meis Mitzvah is going to take priority over all of this concentrated extreme Kedusha. You see the tremendous emphasis the Torah puts on Kavod Abrios. So once upon a time, I was once in Long Island somewhere, in a shul for Shabbos, and you know, in shuls you find all the Sfarim that you don't find anywhere else. I saw a Sefer in that shul I never saw before or since. And I opened up the Sefer, and it had an essay called, the essay was called Maimer Chaviva Sa'adam, which sounded like a beautiful piece. So I opened it up, and it turned out the whole thrust of the essay was only to criticize the Rav on this word. They saw somewhere that one of the Talmidim of the Gridmi Boston had wrote up the following drush of his name, and how could it be? Because it doesn't come up. Your Perez Cohen's not going to be Metame on Yom Kippur. We don't have a Kfura on Yom Kippur. We don't have a Kfura on Shabbos. It's not going to have such a situation that the Rav described, that Kohen Gadol is going to forfeit his Avodas Yom HaKippurim for the Tumah of a Meis Mitzvah. So it happened to be that was Shabbos. So Sunday, I came back to Yeshiva, and I had to look at something in the Shailos and Tshuva Shraga HaMeir. I think I mentioned him recently. It was a Rav from London. And I was looking up the Tshuva, it was by Kiddush. It happened to be that next to the Tshuva I was looking at, right next to it, he had a Tshuva, the Indian Kohen Gadol Shepag of the Meis Mitzvah of Yom HaKippur. And the Tshuva was addressed to the Machaber of the Sefer that I had seen the day before. The Indian, that Kasha that you asked about what the Salvation had said, says, no, it makes sense. I think he gives some possibilities that maybe he did this the day before Yom Kippur. He did it at times in the school that he's coming on Yom Kippur. It doesn't mean that the Gvur was on Yom Kippur, but you can make up a scenario where the Kohen Gadol is going to have to sacrifice his Avodas Yom HaKippurim for the case of Kavod Abrios, so that's what's being emphasized here. Okay, fine. So whatever it is, so you find this halacha which doesn't seem to fit any of the existing rules. So it's a machlokish, Rashi and Tosis, how to understand what's going on. And this is very important because this may add to our list of categories. So in order to try to understand the sugya and try to figure out what mahalas we can take, so we have to try to keep track of where it is that Kavod Abrios wins and where it doesn't win. As you mentioned, if the heart of this whole issue is how conflict is managed between Kavod Abrios and other halachos, so it becomes very much a core issue, where does it prevail and where does it not prevail? So one could maintain that from the Gemara, we see, let's say, three categories where it prevails. And what we'll lay out now is that you could find in Rishonim and a little bit in Achronim perhaps another three categories, another three controversial categories. The ones the Gemara, let's assume, are not disputed. That may or may not be true, but let's take the ones from the Gemara as given. But in later literature, you have, let's say, at least three other categories which are controversial, which are subject to debate. So three categories we can agree on, and three categories we'll discuss and have possibly debate higher.
Just one of the ones that we mentioned is Mammon.
Well, that's the non-debatable.
That's non-debatable.
Yeah,
that's my question is that a specific meaning, because it comes out of the pasuk that he's not the man.
Right.
So is that specifically by a shav sevei where you have that ability to be built because of Kavod Abrios? Because it has the detail, because the Gemara then says that you can't learn it to other places because it's Mammon, does that now expand that past that?
That's a fair question. I think what Pashas is that it teaches the whole Mammon category, as it sounds like. So that even the Pasuk is in the context of a Shavas Aveda, it tells you what the rule is for monetary matters as a whole. I think that's the simplest understanding. So the three categories we know from the Gemara, the Rabbanan, and even Torah law, if it's Sheva Al Pasa or if it's monetary issue. What are the three controversial categories? So the first one is this one, trying to figure out how the Tumas Kohanim works. So this is a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. And according to Rashi, the Machlokas brothers over there, the Chaf Meral, the end of the Sugya. So Rashi says, it's really an Exeris HaKasim. This does not fit any of the existing rules, as we see. It's active, it's Torah law, etc., etc. So the only reason it works is because it's Exeris HaKasim. It's interesting, parenthetically, by the way, this might really be the mucker for everything else. That's a whole discussion of what exactly is the mucker for Kavod Abrios of the Klal. The Prima Gaudin writes it doesn't have a specific mucker, it's basically a Torah principle that just is there. And Rav Shechter has mentioned that it's actually from the Chazal in the beginning of Parshas Emor, which the Gemara quotes here. I think the Midrash can have it a little more explicitly. So the idea of La Yitamah, that the Kohen Gadol does have exceptions, where the Kohen rather, does have exceptions where he is Mitame, so that teaches the whole principle of Kavod Abrios. Could be. But in any case, in this situation, so Rashi says it is a Zer Sakasu, it doesn't follow any other rules, it's just unique to Tumas Kohanim. And Tosfos introduces a different fact. And Tosfos suggests that the reason it works here, really, the Raisa should not give way to Kavod Abrios. So how come in this case it does? So it seems to be that the surah that we're talking about are different types of the surah. And this is a little bit of Yavamis unity, because this is very, there's a lot of Yavamis unity in the sugya, but this particularly has some Yavamis unity, because this is terminology that comes up in the Asei Dochalos Asei sugya. That when the Gemara wants to know if you have a clash between different dinim, the Torah. So if you want to know how to rank them, so there are certain factors that may make a mitzvah, may make an iser, let's say, rank a little bit lower. So for example, Tumas Kohanim has a weakness, so to speak. What's the weakness? Eino shavu l'kol. Doesn't apply to everyone. Like Gemara Yavamis talks about that phrase, if you have an iser that only applies to men, here, this only applies to a small subpopulation within men. And so this is certainly an Isser Sheino Shavu L'Kol. It doesn't apply to the vast majority of Jews who are not subject to this Isser. So therefore, it's an Isser that comes from a little bit of a point of weakness. Now, what about Nazir? So would you use the same terminology for Nazir? Say it's Sheino Shavu L'Kol? Actually not. Because Nazir is considered to be applicable to everyone. Which you need to know if you want to get into a Shechter's Kolo, it's applicable to men and to women as well, right? Because even though maybe nobody in this room right now is subject to Hilchos Nazirus, it's because they haven't taken a vow of Nazirus. But if you do, then it's relevant to you. So Nazirus applies to all Jews equally, it's just not been involved. So Nazirus we wouldn't call Lav Sheino Shavu L'Kol, but it has another weakness. What is supposed to apply there? Sorry? It's a vow, so therefore, because it's a vow, so therefore it can be undone. If a person feels he has a tremendous need for Bas B'Chala, there isn't really anything he can do to suspend the issue of Bas B'Chala. If, for whatever reason, there's some issue a person can't continue with Naziris, so Naziris theoretically can be annulled. So the fact that the issue can be taken away, that clearly puts it at odds with most of the Isurim in the Torah, so that also is a weakness, so to speak. So apparently, what's Tosfos telling us? Sandy?
I thought Tosfos was saying that the reason why you can't use Tumas Kohanim and Naziris as an example to order to every other din d'oraisa so that you're not and you're allowed to be built with the Kohanim.
Okay, so how does it work?
No, I mean, he's saying that enough of the way, the reason that they specifically have this ability that they're nivcha because they cover the brios is because it's exeris hakasim.
Right. He's saying he doesn't have to necessarily argue on that part of it.
Yeah, meaning he's arguing on Rashi because he doesn't understand that it's an essential part of the azhara that it's not, that's not part of it.
I understand, but essentially I think it goes in both directions with all the examples of Gemara, that the factors that are invoked in the Gemara and the Rishonim are factors that make it not necessarily transferable to other dinim, but are also a part of what makes the Code of Brios Chayash work. That it works because it's defined in this category. So in this case, so Tumas Kohanim has these issues, and Naziris has these issues. So apparently, what do we see here? We see here that in addition to the categories we've seen so far, that Kavod Avrios is Gofa, a weaker Issim. So even if it's an Issim in HaTorah, and it's an active Issim in HaTorah, if it has some weakness, Kavod Avrios prevails over that also. And Rashi doesn't say all this, perhaps. So we'll call this a controversial category. So whether or not there is such an idea that an Issur in the Torah, if it's a weakened Issur, Eino Shavu L'Kol Yesh Nevisheila, Kavod Avrios will win, that might be the first of our controversial categories. Well, that's what it sounds like, that's what Tosfos is getting at. I think that the factor here is that these Issurim that are giving way to Kavod Avrios, what makes them do that if it doesn't fit the existing rules is the fact that it has this component, Yeshno B'Sheila or Eino Shavu L'Kol. The second controversial category seems to be a topic of debate between the Rosh and the Rambam. The Gemara has a din, and the Gemara talks about one of the cases where Kavod Avrios doesn't win. Let's say somebody is walking in the street with his fancy new coat, and he happens to notice as he's walking, he looks in the label, and the label says 100% pure shadows. And the label says 50% wool, 50% linen. So that's an example where Kavod Avrios is not. Doesn't fit any of the rules, right? This is an Issur min HaTorah, an active Issur. So what's the din of the Gemara? So you have to take it off, even in public, because Kavod Avrios is not going to prevail here. This is an example of a case that doesn't fit. Now, it seems like, if you look carefully at the language, that there is a difference between the way the Rosh records this din and the Rambam records this din. And it could be the difference might be motivated by a girsa difference, but it has a significant halachic ramification. And it could be a matter of one letter. What's or at least a word, a girsa issue. What's the difference between the way the Rambam sees it and the Rosh sees it? That the Rambam sees this as applying even in the following case. Let's say you don't notice it in big dough, in your garment, but let's say you are walking behind your friend. Your friend has got his fancy new garment, and he never looked at the back, and the back is a big sign that says Great American Shadness Company. So he doesn't know about it. From the back. So it sounds like from the Rosh that the din of taking it off only applies if you discover it. But if you discover it in somebody else's garment, so maybe not. Well, what would the difference be? What's the difference between you finding it in your own clothes and you finding it in somebody else's clothes? Because the other person, well, not necessarily Shebaal Taisek, Shebaal Tzvok, you're saying he's the one who comes by say, but the other person is a shogeg. And so it sounds like there is a machlokas here that if a person is doing an aderu with comes by say in the Torah, but he's doing it with shogeg, so then Kavod Avrios will still win. But you only have to take the garment off if you become aware and become amazed in the process. But if the other person is a shogeg, then maybe you could tell this person, you know what, go home, it's okay, I want to call you, but rush home right now, I'm going to be calling in a minute. And then when the person runs home, then you say, by the way, that garment you're wearing, don't wear it anymore, because it has a shadness issue. So this is a major machlokas, which continues to be a machlokas with Mavazet. A lot of poskim and famous Shaikh Arye about it. It's a lot of discussion about this question, whether Kavod Avrios can be both an activist in the Torah if it is Peshogit. There is a famous discussion in the Shuvah of Yehuda. Yehuda has a bunch of horrible truth is. I don't mean that the truth is so bad. I mean that he talks about this horrific smell situation. If you read through the Noda Behuda, it seems like Prague was in really bad shape morally at that time. So there are a lot of crazy smell shilas that the Noda Behuda was confronted with. It's the one that's very often quoted. For some reason, I'm not sure why, it's in the Lamed Hey. So he talks about a situation where there was this man who was mizana with his mother-in-law. And then, over a long period of time, and then he eventually realized that was a bad idea and did tshuva. But the problem is, so now his mother-in-law is really usher to his father-in-law, she was mizana. So the very distinguished family. So it's going to be a big rebellion if they have to divorce. So the question is, does the covenant of Rios allow him not to tell his father-in-law about what happened so he shouldn't have to divorce him? So there's a lot of different issues that the Yehuda considers in this question, but one of the things he takes into account doesn't necessarily run with it, although other posts can do in similar cases. There happens to be a number of Jewish events like this. The Rechaim also had a tshuva like this, and the Maharsha Engel also had a tshuva like this, where they were a little more mingled on this factor. But the question is, if we could say that the Rosh holds that it's a shogeg, so Kavod Abrius will win shogeg, so let the problem of the ring the shogeg, and you don't have to run out to tell him. Correct, but so she's got her own problem. She knows what she's doing, so then she can make her own decisions. But if the father is violating this b'shogeg, the question is, do you have to tell him? That's essentially the issue. Hi.
Do you say that these cases that the Gemara is giving, maybe let's say even with the case of the Shok, those are like, we have to consider them objectively covenant-breeders, or is it dependent on like society?
That's a big question in general. So does it depend on society, or does it depend on the individual within society? So that's part of the machlokas we referred to yesterday. There was a correspondence between the two students of Rabbi Shaul Salanta, the Pri Yitzchak and the Naftali Amsterdam. A lot of letters going back and forth from the back of the Chumash Pri Yitzchak, Chalik Beis. So Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam maintains, you have to see how this works with the Gemaras, because it seems like it's a challenge to a number of Makoros, that it has to be an objective Kavod Abrius for everybody kind of issue. That something that's very personalized is not going to be subject to the Seterim. Divrei Malkiel has a tshuva like that also. That's why some explain why we don't say, maybe we should suggest, like our opening premise, right? We would have thought this whole sugya shouldn't exist. We always would tell you to get over it when it's a din in the Torah. So why don't we tell people, listen, it's Kavod Abrius maybe is an issue, but we would still recommend you should be mochel your kavod and you should allow the halacha to prevail. So some explain based on this idea that it's not the kavod of the individual, it's the kavod of humanity. It's not going to help if this one individual is going to be mochel, that all of humanity is going to be diminished, so to speak, is going to be undignified in this context, so there is no room for mechila. That's how some suggest. So this was a part of the debate between the two Talmidim, between the Zuchali Amsterdam and the Pri Yitzchak, about how we perceive these issues. I should also point out, when we talk about Kavod Abrius, presumably, this is a bit of a discussion as well, where I'm looking to and there's a whole article about this that was printed in a journal called Machanayim. But the Pashup Shat is that we talk about Kavod Abrius, we don't mean specifically Jewish Brius. We mean Brius as a whole. Meaning that all of humanity is created with Tzelem Elokim, as the commentaries of Tiferes Yisrael and others on the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos point out, that presumably this derives from the din of Tzelem Elokim. So Tzelem Elokim is not a Jewish idea. Tzelem Elokim is all humanity. It sounds like that from the Rambam and Hilchos Sanhedrin. I think I put it on the Mar Makomos that this din of Kavod Abrius means humanity in general. So that's a little bit separate, but related to the question of whether it's an objectively perceived Kavod Abrius or whether it gives room for more of an individual perception. But that's the harder part of this issue. Michael,
When we say that you should,
the
Gemara says that the person should take off the climbing garment.
So it's what it sounds like. You know, it's a question how exactly that works in terms of Erevah. It sounds like the guy is really going to be walking around undressed. So how exactly that fits with other concerns of Hilchos Tznius is hard to exactly pin down. This also relates to another example where this machlokes, the Ram and the Rashi is invoked. If you saw the Ramah, I think I put this Ramah in the Ma'amar Kamos, the Ramah posted in Shemus Hadashin, that if a Kohen is asleep in a building in the middle of the night, and the assumption is he's not dressed at all, and there somebody dies in the building, so the Ramah is makel that you don't have to tell him to jump out of the building right now. You can tell him first, get dressed is an issue. Then once you get dressed, you can say now there's a mace in the building and he should get out. So maybe you're going to raise the issue that was raised by the Tshuva Sefer Yoshua, by Rabbi Yeshua Babad, that, well, this is Tumas Kohen, there's more makel anyway. Right, so that's, the Noda Behuda took the same perspective. The Noda Behuda writes, both in the Tzlach and in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, the Dogma Mervava, that the only Tzad Lahachner is according to Rashi. But according to Tosfos, that there's an inherent... But if you assume there's an inherent kula in Tumas Kohen, so then that already is going to be a difference. In any event, so this all goes to this. Yeah.
I was going to go even further, yes? But nowadays everybody is found mace anyway, so therefore, and plus if you're going to hold like rat, you have the sheet of the rat, that
Tumas Kohen.
Yes.
We still assume there's an issue of the rights of the parents to be in town.
No, meaning if you're... you shouldn't do it, but I'm saying, isn't the Arab there, those who are mainly based on the rights like that?
Well, not under normal, not under... It's cooler based on the rights that if it's going actively, is already involved in some additional level of... Yeah, it goes beyond
the... He's sleeping.
Right.
So he's already...
Because once he started... Okay, could be. Sorry?
That's more when you have a separate Tumas at the
Ma'amishon. So that's part of the discussion also. It's a little bit of an involved discussion, so we will leave this out for now. But there is what the question about to what extent you need the whole rush over there. But in any event, this Machlok is around the rush, a major player in terms of how this halacha is developed, and maybe Judy and others invoking this extensively. There are different readings of the Rosh also, that maybe the question is not about being Mako and Shogate, maybe it's just a question of to what extent the Yimachriyah to be mapped with somebody else from Nisr. There's a lot of literature about it, but the simplest way to relate to it is that that's the Machlokas here. The Rambam says this halacha applies regardless, Bain B'Shogate, Bain B'Mezid, that Covet of Brios does not prevail here. And the Rosh essentially telling us a new category, that if you have an Nisr Daraisa, B'Kum Vaseh, but it's Bishogeg, so then Kavod HaBrios will win. So we possibly have now two additional categories that are less unanimous, two controversial categories. That on the one hand, we can discern, and on the other hand, an Avera Bishogeg. So the third possible category, which comes a little bit from the later literature, the Tshuvas de Rechaim has a discussion, the Sanz Rebbe has a discussion which goes back to the whole Rambam and Ramban about Surah Rabbanan. He asks, it's really a question on the Sugya, that if you believe, like the Rambam, that violating Din of Rabbanan essentially puts you at odds with the Din Min HaTorah, a violation of those Sasser, so how indeed does it work? That Kavod HaBrios can be dolted. The Kavod HaBrios, as a rule, is not going to be dolted in Surah Daraisa. And if Bososer indeed should be in that category, so how does it work? So he suggests essentially a new category. That you could say that the fact that he serves the Rabbanan are backed up by Torah law and therefore have the authority. That may be true. But nonetheless, a person who violates them is not contradicting the Torah, because it's not explicit in the Torah anywhere that there is whatever rule we're talking about, whatever Din D'Rabbanan we're talking about. It's true that the individual Din D'Rabbanan, whatever it may be, is backed up and endorsed and therefore has the authority of the D'Raisa. But this person is not acting, so to speak, keneged Hashem. He's not acting against the Torah because it's not spelled out in the Chumash anyway. So essentially, he seems to be expressing a chiddush that if you have a din min haTorah, which has the authority of a din min haTorah, but is not spelled out in Chumash, Kavod HaBrios will win again. Others discussed this chiddush as well. The Minchat Shiravi, the Minchat Salazar, accepted the pshat and the din, but didn't accept the chiddush. Maharash Engel has a tshuva also where he does accept this idea. And he thought that the Rambam
agreed with his author.
And I'll tell you another crazy story about that. Quickly crazy story. So I was once visiting my grandmother, Elad Shalom, in London. And she's in my pre-beard days. And it was Friday. So I had to shave for Shabbos. It was not during the spirit. And apparently I'm the first American to ever visit London because my shaver didn't have the right transformer to fit in the plugs in England. And nowhere in the surrounding stores did they have one. I don't know why it was so hard to obtain it. I must be the first tourist to ever come there. But you could not get one anywhere locally. And didn't want to burn down my grandmother's house. So I had to go on a long bus trip to a faraway mall to try to find the right adapter to make my shaver work on the wall. So while I was on the bus and schlepping up there, so I was thinking, you know, why do I have to make such a trip? Maybe, you know, who knows how much power is left in the shaver? Maybe it's worth starting, see how far it gets, and whatever happens, happens. So as I'm having this thought, so I happened to have some notes with me. So I was reviewing some notes about the sugya of Kavod HaBrios. And I got up to this point, exactly at that moment, that the faith of the Muri Hashem is the Dayak and the Rambam, that this is the Rambam Shito also. Because the Rambam has a psak that if somebody is in the middle of shaving and he hears Shemes lo Meis, he hears that he's an Adol, so then he should continue shaving. Why? Because it's such a bizayin to stop in the middle that would outweigh both of the veils. I took that as a sin of Mishamayim that I should not follow my plan of just starting the shaving and see what happens. But the point that Lulei Hashem was deriving from here is that the Rambam Shita is that Avelus Yom Rishon, it's a minority view in Rishonim, but the Rambam's view is that the day of Nisan Kura is Avelus Min HaTorah. So the Zachi of Avelus Min HaTorah, so the Rambam holds apparently would be Nisar Daraisa involved. And yet he's still allowing Kavod HaBrios to win. So why is that? So the assumption is because even if the Rambam believes this is essentially a din min haTorah, it's certainly not spelled out in the Chumash. That's the rule. So it wouldn't be a contradiction to Chumash in any explicit sense to do this, so Kavod HaBrios would win as well. Yes?
Yeah, but that can be taken to like such an extreme, almost all of the din we have from the Torah and Darshan from
not necessarily.
All turn that up.
Yeah, but that's a good question, and I guess our whole topic of this year, I guess, the question to what extent that's true or not. You know, there is a question how far you want to go with that. If we define malacha objectively, and then we say, okay, the person is doing a malacha, and the Torah says not to do malacha, it is a contradiction. In the case of this Rambam, for example, it's much further. The Torah doesn't say anything close to don't shave during Avelos. And you really have to go many steps in order to see that written in the Torah. Or whatever din d'rabbanan we're talking about, the Torah doesn't say anything close to that. It says lo saser, and there's no visible representation between what's going on and this. So if we're talking about a malacha, it's true, our whole theme this year is that we need a lot of help from Torah Shabbat to know exactly what they are. But the vice, you're doing an action which is perceived as a malacha, the Torah says, don't do a malacha. It's not exactly the same. Your question is well taken, but how far, where exactly we draw the line would be a fair question. But you don't necessarily have to put the two in the same category. But just while this question was mentioned, just want to mention in terms of the halacha l'maisa about this, this sugya does overlap with a whole other sugya, which we're not talking about at all this time. But next year it's a sugya in Maseches Bava Metzia, so maybe I'll find some way for it to come up. But there is a very related sugya, which involves just a whole other element to it, that the Gemara does compare Halbanos Pnei Chaver Barabim, a person being humiliated to death, to Shrifas Damim. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach has a tshuva where he asks, why shouldn't we say then, if it's really compared to death, and it's a whole discussion if it's a literal comparison or it's not a literal comparison, but it sounds like from Shlomo Zalman a little bit of both, it's as if it's really compared to death, so why is it that we're not Mechal Shabbos to prevent somebody from being humiliated? We should say that, okay, we're Mechal Shabbos to save somebody's life, we should be Mechal Shabbos to prevent humiliation as well. So he's not ready to say that. So he has a kasha, which he thinks is a very strong kasha. He recognizes that's not the minhag, so he's not ready to say that. It happens to be there's a lesser known posuk, the Teshuvah Shem Yishimin. He does go that far. But Rav Shlomo Zalman, in the context of not saying that the Mechal Shabbos to prevent somebody from humiliation, he says, however, if it's Chol Shabbos to Rabbanan, then we would allow it because that's Kavadabrios. That's what our sugya that we're talking about here. That Kavadabrios is both as in Rabbanan, including in Hilcha Shabbos. So Hilcha Shabbos has its own relationship with Kavadabrios. We don't find anyone saying that the whole concept of Melacha is not Furish in the Torah, so we'll take it off the list anyway. Hi, I think it was Corey up first. I think it was Corey that said it.
Well,
go halfway. It's a good question. Right. It's a fair question. There's a whole area in which Purim seems to be different than the rest of the year. And there are a number of questions where, Beged Isha being one of them, a lot of other related questions where the issue comes up, are we willing to take a different attitude towards Yisurim on Purim because of the environment? So it's a question that's a little bit beyond the scope of today's discussion. One could say that here maybe we'll be more amenable to it, that maybe if people are not going to see it as a bizarre because it's in the spirit of what everyone's doing, something a little bit different, you could make such a case. It's an interesting question. Sammy?
Why do you have to go so far to say that if the Bosasar is in that Torah, so then how can you be dope in it? Because that was the whole premise of the Gemara. I mean, that's the whole point. The whole Bosasar is ruled by the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan are saying that Kavadabrios is dope, so therefore...
Right, that gets into a whole other discussion, which is, again, beyond the scope of our desire to keep this to a one-day sugya. But, that's part of what the Rambam and the Ramban are fighting about in that whole issue. So what we're trying to do is only say enough about that we need to know to understand this. But one of the questions over there is that the Rambam says it's all from Lo Sasser, and the Ramban says if it's all from Lo Sasser, you're telling me it's essentially a Daraisa, how could we make the one or anything? And many defend the Rambam by saying it's a Daraisa, which is regulated by Chazal for whatever reason. So all of that is going to fit into how we're reading the Gemara. So essentially just taking the very minimalist sense just so we could keep it limited to the Kavadabrios part of it. So that's essentially what the Divrei Chaim was discussing. He's basically telling you what the Shaka and Tari of the Gemara is. But if the Gemara tells you as a premise, the Rai says it doesn't work, but the Rabbanans it does, and in the same breath, the Gemara itself here is telling us that the Rabbanans are connected to Al-Sasr, how do we read that and make it make sense? And that's where he puts in this Enam Mufurish consideration. Hi.
With that Rishon Lazana, so is he implying that making fun of someone is an issue of Kavadabrios, or that there's a separate idea of Kavadabrios and that
He's saying, well, they make it fun is the loose term, so we'll say humiliating, those stronger terms. He's saying that it's all part of one continuum, but that Kavadabrios is an aspect of humiliation, and humiliation, we find the Gemara says, has a din like death, so maybe we should say, Shvidoch HaShabbos, and the Reis 11. So he tries to answer why that's not the case, but if the din is Drabbanan, he says that would be the case, because that's what our Gemara is telling us. That's not Roshon Zalman's Chiddush. Our Gemara is telling us that dinim drabbanan that are negated to humiliation are suspended because of.
But he's saying that humiliation is an issue of Kavadabrios.
Yeah, but that Kavadabrios is not necessarily enough to be Docha Daraisa. So he doesn't invoke it in that context because it doesn't come up. But that even without Kavadabrios, we should say that if it's like death, so if it will be Mechal Shabbos to save somebody from dying, we should be Mechal Shabbos to save somebody from being humiliated also. And that's a whole other wing of this discussion. Come back next year for Bav and then we'll get up to it. But it's clearly an overlapping sugya, but with its own makoros from beginning to end. Okay, so essentially, what do we have now?
We have, let's say, three controversial categories, in addition to our three accepted categories.
Vikadisara, Shogeg, and issues that are not the Tayrish and Punch. So maybe the resolution of these three controversial issues, maybe it hinges on the central question of what exactly is going on here. How does it happen that Kavod HaBriyos is going to overwhelm Dinim and Halacha? Especially if our opening premise in Gemara Brachos is that that shouldn't be possible. So I think you have at least two ways to understand how it happened. On the one hand, you could say that it happens because what we have here is a values clash. We have two dinim coming up against each other. We have whatever dinim we're talking about, and Kavod HaBriyos, which is also a dinim. And therefore, we have a clash. We have to figure out what exactly are we going to do? How are we going to prioritize? Maybe that's what we're dealing with. So if that's true, maybe we can make a chart like this. Right, let's say we have a scale of 1 to 10 of severity of din. Right, so let's say Kavod HaBriyos, Gadol Kavod HaBriyos, Kavod HaBriyos, it's a very powerful idea. How powerful is it? Let's call it a 9. Okay, Kavod HaBriyos is a big deal. Yes, sir.
Is that similar thing as you go back to say?
It might be related. It's basically a principle of Zechia, the principle of clash. So what do you want to call it? Asei Dol Ha'asei, Asei something else. You call it anything you want, but it's that same type of idea that it's about a clash between values. As a normal rule, but the question is if we have this broad total principle which has its own rules, so how exactly are we going to regulate it? So maybe Kavod HaBriyos, let's say, is a 9 on the level, 9 on our scale. So it's going to take a lot of power. So it's going to be docha things that are lower on the scale. So the only thing that's a 10 is Zachil Hashem. That's the biggest deal. And that's the same thing. What's the Zachil Hashem? Zachil Hashem is a lo saseh b'nai Torah. Or equivalent terms for our purpose. And if you're going to violate a lo saseh, that's a Zachil Hashem. So that's a 10. So Kavod HaBriyos loses to that. But if it's lower on the scale, so then Kavod HaBriyos is going to win. So let's say, just to arbitrarily make up numbers, so let's say Din D'Rabbanan is a 6. If Kavod HaBriyos is a 9, it's going to win. Sheval Tase, let's say we'll have to get into some more detail because this is a complicated point, but let's accept it on faith for a minute, that Sheval Tase is also a less chomer daraisa. So instead of being a 10, let's call it a 7. So again, Kavod HaBriyos wins. And Mama will put in that category also. So essentially, the way all of this works is that we have a scale because we have clashing values. We have to figure out how many points to assign to one value or the other. And Kavod HaBriyos is pretty high. It's docha a lot of things. It's docha everything except the one thing we have the pasuk about, l'neged Hashem. So chil Hashem, we don't give kavod anymore. Okay, does that make sense as a possible model so far? So if that is the model, so how would we look at the questions that we've seen so far as controversial questions? So for example, we can discern the view of Tosfos. So we can discern give way to Kavod HaBriyos? Well, maybe yes. Maybe if that's the whole point of weaken these surahs, is that they go down a few notches. So maybe that's the point. Maybe they could be lowered from a 10 to an 8. So they weaken these surahs. So maybe that view that Kavod HaBriyos wins over weaken these surahs makes sense on this quantitative scale. The Rambam and the Rush Shoge? How does that work here? Maybe also, right? We know that Shoge very often takes the bite out of an iser to a certain extent. Maybe it's still an issue in that Torah, but much less overall. So maybe the idea that Kavod HaBriyos should win over an iser b'shoge, maybe that also makes sense in the quantitative scale. What about the third issue, the things that are not the favorish in the Torah? More difficult, I agree, right? Because you think that's really still a 10. It's just not spelled out in Chumash, but the Isser is not any weaker. The authority is still there for the Torah. So my assessment so far, you could disagree, is that if you follow this model, it's basically about a clash of values and we have to assess quantities and decide what wins, that in terms of our controversial issues, we can be makel on the shoge, we can be makel on the weakened yisurim, but maybe not necessarily on the non-explicit yisurim. However, there is an additional model we can use. We could say, here, this really touches upon a lot of the hashkafic teams, we could say that it's not really about Dechia, but it's about something else. And the Chassam Sofer comments, I think it's a Rashi like this also, that when we look at the model of, let's say, the Rabbanans and Hashav HaSaveda, to use that model, so we could say, start from Hashav HaSaveda, but why is it that I find your wallet and it's going to diminish my covenant to return it? I'm positive. Why should I be positive? Don't you have a right to get your wallet returned to you? Isn't that what Hashem HaSaveda tells us? You have the supposed to have your wallet given back? So what is it that allows me to pass up on that? So we could say that this is an issue of Mechila. I could say that yes, it's true that the recipient should have, or the owner of the wallet should have the right to get his wallet back. But we could also say that we could assume with confidence that nobody would want their wallet back if the cost of getting it back is that somebody is going to have to be mevaza himself in order to do that. If that's the case, and the person is going to have to go through a bizayon, so then the individual is willing to be mochel on his right to get back his wallet. So essentially, it's not that any iser or any mitzvah was outweighed, it's that the mitzvah was essentially removed because the owner of the wallet is willing to be mochel. And we can say with confidence that that's an umdana, that the owner will always be mochel if it means the alternative is a bizayon to the kavod ha'adam. Hi. Not necessarily,
not Yates. But being the idea is the same, that we are confident that if he knew that he actually lost it, so then he would for sure be Me'ayishak. So,
I don't know if that's really connected, though. Here we're saying that he knows where his property, whether he knows his property is coming back. And he's mochel. He says, it's okay, I don't want it back, because the cost of getting it back is going to be too great for your recovery. I'm not sure if it really parallels.
Yeah, Shah Zaveh does. I mean, you don't know that he knows that it's gone.
Correct.
You never know. So having this idea of Mechil would only be after he knew that it was gone.
No, even if he did know. The question is if he doesn't know, but if he did know, he would still be mochel.
Why?
The assumption that whatever Zchus he has to get his property back, he is willing, if he knows about it or doesn't know about it, but he would be willing to be mochel. There's an implicit Mechil built into the system, because nobody would want their property back at the cost of somebody going through a bizayon. That seems to be the working premise. I think Ari was up first, and Danny?
I've been calling that maybe only, you know, among mochel unless you're sensitive people, like old people, they're just used, you know, mochel of a bed, but not ye, because maybe some young guy will come as a third as well.
So you're saying theory doesn't have to totally give up the connection to it?
Right.
Okay, again, I don't know how much you have to bring that into the discussion, but that point is well taken. Donny? Good question. So we don't know what the story would be. Maybe if this is really the pshat, so maybe that might make a difference. So maybe we'll say but ladaita. Maybe he doesn't have the right to make such a hakpada. Maybe the Torah already told him he doesn't have the right to have such a kveda. But it's a fair question if such a scenario came up, and how much would this explanation be factored in? So that has been invoked also as the explanation for why Dinim Darabanan are suspended. Because if we assume there are many different formulations of why we follow Dinim Darabanan, but if we say that it's essentially an act of kavod to Chazal, that we refer to Chazal and we follow the rules, so perhaps it can be posited that Chazal also were both of our very kavod in favor of the covenant of the individual, and therefore Dinim Darabanan essentially they suspended as well in order to allow for the dignity of the individual to be protected.
Hi.
The Chazal as a whole were mochal on their dinim, that they only... Perhaps it is. A different formulation of how exactly that is stated. It's all Ramban issue. But it's not a uncommon formulation. We are obligated to be mechabe Chazal, so to speak. You don't have to necessarily formulate that way in order for it to work, but the idea that Chazal has some degree of latitude in how their dinim are going to be applied. So then one can say that they're mochal on that kveda in order to protect the covenant of the individual. Sammy? Similar to, let's say, a weaker type of the chiyuv is a little bit less. The chiyuv is that the kavanas haTorah is that it should get returned, and if you don't do it, there's a reasonable assumption somebody else will do it. It gets into a little bit of time to the crud in terms of Hashavah Sereza.
It also just gets into time to the crud, saying that the reason is because of Mechila, that's all the time. But it says,
Vissalantim. Time to the crud and the Kavod Abriyas exemption. Yeah. Right, you're saying Kavod time to the crud and the whole mitzvah of Hashavah Sereza. It's a little more sweeping. Okay. Could be. So this is possible, that we're not dealing with a tension, with a conflict here, rather with a mechila, but it leads us to a somewhat shocking conclusion. Because we do find that it's not just the owners of wallets and the rabbis who are being mocha for the covenant of the individual. But apparently, it could also be a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And because even if Mokum Mechila Hashem and Chokum Kavod L'Rav, but if it's a Shev Al Tassim in that Torah, that's still God is the violent hand. And that's still between you and God. And apparently, Makom Shev Al Tassim, we see even HaKadosh Baruch Hu willing to be mocha. And that's a much harder idea to understand. Because especially if we assume that the whole premise of Kavod Abriyos is humanity is created in God's image, we sell in the whole thing. So then, when you honor a human being, so then that transfers over to God. So that's great. But then if there's a conflict between honoring God directly and honoring a person which then indirectly honors God, so why shouldn't we cut out the middleman? Why shouldn't we say that we'll always rather honor God directly rather than honor the individual? And this is a question you could ask on a medrash. I put this, I think, on the Marmakomos, Rashi, in Parshas Balak, quotes a surprising medrash that I would have thought that if I was making the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum of Miracles, that a great exhibit having that museum would be a great Kiddush Hashem if I could put Bilam's donkey in that museum. Right, that would really show the world how Kadosh Baruch Hu is protecting the Jewish people. And yet, what happened? What did Rashi tell us? What did the Medrash say? Is that what happened? Did he put in the museum? And quite the opposite. A Kadosh Baruch Hu arranged for the donkey to disappear. Why? Because he was a Bizayon to Bilam. And Chazal go on to say, you see how much a Kadosh Baruch Hu worries about the kavod even of a Rasha like Bilam. So all the more so, a kavod chomer, you're dealing with a decent person, for sure, there is an obligation of covet every day. So this is an extreme formulation of the question we asked a second ago. That here, you basically have a choice. You could either have a tremendous kiddush Hashem by having this donkey be a representation of the kiddush Hashem, right? Or instead, you forfeit that in order to protect the covet of rios of one of the worst people in history, of Noah. And not only were we protecting his covet, but we're doing it at the expense of an opportunity to directly be behind a God. How does that make sense? So I think you could say as follows. There is something that the Baal Musar talks about, which you could call the paradox of the Baal Gaiva, the paradox of the Domainian. Shevet Musar and other Baal Musar talk about this. That the Baal Gaiva, you may think he has it all, and you may feel some jealousy towards him. The Baal Gaiva, you should know, really has a lousy life. Really a very frustrating existence. Because the Baal Gaiva, he doesn't really hold from you at all. He doesn't hold from anybody else. He thinks he's better than everybody. He doesn't really respect you. But he has to pretend that he does respect you for a minute in order to get covered from you. Because if he doesn't really hold anybody's worthwhile, so then what's the point in getting covered from him? Not meaningful. Honor is only meaningful if it comes from people who are honored. You don't think that people are important, so then there's nothing to gain from them complimenting you or honoring you. Now one could suggest that that's shot on the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And the Mishnah which tells us that who is it who is honored, he who honors others. So you could see that as simply reciprocal. Okay, I'll honor you, you honor me. Have a mutual honor society. Or you could see it as more fundamental, that somebody who's not machabe anybody else, and there's no source of cover for that. There's nowhere to get cover from if you don't think anybody's worth anything. But if you believe other people are honorable, if you show cover to others, so then it makes sense that they can come back and be machabe too, because they are themselves people who have their own kavod. So if that's the case, so it means that kavod is a unique factor, has its own quirk in how it works, in that kavod is built on mechila. The more kavod is given to the people on the lower rung, the more they raise up the people on the higher rung. So it makes sense, even for HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, to worry about the covet of his creations, because if his creations are not mechubadim, so then Kavod Shamayim is diminished. So the more human beings are mechubadim, the more ultimately that goes back upstairs and the more Kavod Shamayim is increased. So if there's a clash that's talking about Achil Hashem, a person is going to disgrace God, so then, that makes no sense. The Makom Chil Hashem Ein Cholkin Kavod L'Rav. But if it's a question of skipping an opportunity, of Sheva Al Tatzah, it's not going to be any Bizoyim to God. But it's a question of not taking this opportunity to be Makabed in. Maybe it makes sense, even from a Kodesh Baruch Hu's perspective, to pass up on that opportunity and make sure that humanity remains Mechubedik, so that ultimately that all is Mardik for Shemayim. So this could be a whole different way of understanding what's going on here, that it's not about Bechiyah, it's not about a clash, that very often when there's a possibility of Mechila, so then that will be invoked and Kavod Avriyus will prevail. And it's only when there's an active Bizayin to God, so to speak, because the Chil Hashem is the defiance of the Torah, so then Kavod Avriyus is not going to prevail. So if that's the way to understand it, we might say the opposite approach in everything we've said so far.
Adam? Did you that last sentence?
Yeah, then it might be that generally the rule is that when the Chila can be invoked to protect the Kavod of the individual, it can. And the one major exception is when it's a Chil Hashem, when it's a disgrace to God, so then that's going to be the highest priority. But if it's not about disgracing God, it's just about missing an opportunity, or there's some other reason why mechila could be effective, because there's a human being involved who could be mochel, the owner of a wallet, a chazal, whatever it is, so then that's going to be invoked. But it's not about severity. It's not about this whole chart that we have on 1 to 10. It's about whether or not there is an active violation of an iser, which would be a chalashem. So perhaps if that's the explanation you want to take, that could push us in the opposite direction of all of our questions. Because maybe an aveira of b'shogeg, or an aveira that's a weakened iser, there are still, at the end of the day, active violations of the Torah. So it's still a chalashem. So maybe we'll take the chumrah position on those two. And we'll say that we're not going to accept those additions to the law. However, the Divrei Chaim's Chiddush, that if it's not the Farish and Chumash, maybe the side to be making on that is to say that it's only a Chil Hashem, a violation of the Torah, which we wrote on the board before, Lo Saseh Min HaTorah equals Chil Hashem. Maybe that's only true when it's a Lo Saseh that you can open up the Torah and see that it's there. But if it's not spelled out in Chumash, if there's no self-evident contradiction to the Torah, maybe it's not automatically a Chil Hashem, and maybe again, Kadosh Baruch Hu has room to be malchus, so to speak. So I think that's a possible approach. Once you take this whole sugya, and the time we have room, what time left? I don't want to carry this sugya on to another day, so I'm going to try to do this quickly. Just want to mention possibly two nachumim, and the second one's more complicated than the first. Let's see if you can at least mention the first. So I think you could find this, it's very important also, in Tosfos in Shavuos. Now, if you saw Tosfos in Shavuos, which is on the Ramah Chomos, so Tosfos raised the question of why is it that there is a din that a Talmud Chacham, let's say he is the chief justice of the Sanhedrin, he's the biggest guy in the country. Nonetheless, if he's needed to testify in a municipal court, minor matter, he still has to testify. Isn't that a depreciation of his covenant? So shouldn't we say covenant of Rios is a state, shock the chief justice of the Supreme Court into a minor traffic court in a small town? Isn't that going to be a diminution of his covenant? And let's say he's not going to show up. If he doesn't show up, so it would seem like that's a Sheval passive. It should be included in this new category of where Cabrios wins. So let's say that, against what the Gemara seems to say there, we should say that Talmud Chacham shouldn't have to show up to testify in front of a smaller court. We're assuming here that he's not the defendant. He's an aide. If he's the defendant, it's a whole different story. Folks can talk about it. But you have the right to take him to Bezdin no matter who he is. But if he, or at least if he's not the novice, but if he's an aide, so here one should say, Kavod HaBrios, he doesn't have to come. So Tosfos has two answers. And I think the two answers correspond to the two approaches that we've been talking about. One approach Tosfos has is that it's not called Sheval Tasa, because the situation that we're dealing with, whatever the case is, it's a situation where if this Dayan doesn't, if the Talmud Chacham doesn't give his Eidus, so there will be an Aveira done to Kumbaset. And therefore, it's considered to be a Kumbaset. So that answer in Tosfos is apparently saying that all we look at here is whether or not something is happening to Kumbaset. There's going to be a Chil Hashem somewhere. The fact that he's not doing it himself, somebody else will do it, that doesn't help us. At the end of the day, it's going to be a Chil Hashem. It's going to be an Aveira Daraisa happening. So the Kavod HaBrios of this other party is not going to be enough to allow the Chil Hashem to take place. We have to infringe on his Kavod to prevent the Chil Hashem. The other answer, I think, happens to be a very important Yisod, which was discussed by Postgit. It's very important in terms of understanding this whole subject, and also plugs in really to our first understanding. What's the other answer Tosfos gives? Mechalek between a Gnai Katan and a Gnai Gadol. That's a very important yesod. And it's very crucial for understanding how the sugya should be applied to Halacha L'maaseh. It's saying that, yes, Kavod HaBrios is Docha Him. But there's Kavod HaBrios and there's Kavod HaBrios. Not all Kavod HaBrios is equal. So for a distinguished person to have to testify in front of a lower court, so yes, that's not in keeping with his Kavod. That is not fully sticking to the requirements of his Kavod. But it's not humiliation. There's different degrees. So there's a Gnai Gadol and a Gnai Katan. We have to figure out exactly how to quantify it, Halacha L'maaseh. But it's not always the case that Kavod HaBrios is going to be Docha. That to say Kavod HaBrios is a 9, that's the Kavod HaBrios specifically of a Gnai Gadol. But it's going to be variable. So if it's a minor issue, then maybe Kavod HaBrios can go down to every number lower on the chart, and maybe it can become a 4. So we'll worry about it, but it won't necessarily outweigh other things. So in general, we're going to worry about the covet of this dying. He shouldn't do things that are not within his dignity. But to say that it's going to be a whole 9, that it should be docha other things, maybe we're not ready to say that. Okay, I don't want to miss mincha. So basically, what I will this is most of what I want to do. There are a few points. One of the major issues we have to also try to discuss a little bit is what shape I'll pass in, because it also factors in. So maybe we'll leave just a few points for Sunday, and our agenda will be like this, that tomorrow is Tazria Mitzvah Yom HaTzmaut, so we have a lot to talk about. We'll have Shir at 12 tomorrow, because the Suda Soda at 1. And on Sunday, we'll finish off a few points about this, and then start the Malach of Gozes. So we'll get right into Gozes, so that we can start our Malacha Marathon and try to get as much finished before we run out of time. And we'll also discuss next week how we'll squeeze in some Chazara without slowing down our pace. Have some suggestions about that. We'll try to get that in as well. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful day. Should be only good things. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Someone says, obviously, I'm not absolutely the fact that the case of the Mario is going to be that one.